think also as a dancer, as much as I loved it, I felt silenced by it. There was like always a right way to do something. You know, put your arm here, put your leg there. And another part of me was so completely obsessed with like getting it right. And I would go to any length in my body to like master something.
Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women.
For episode 65, we are joined by Stephanie George, Head of Movement for the University of Essex East 15 Acting School. Originally from Texas, Stephanie trained as a dancer at the Virginia Commonwealth University and went on to perform in countless productions in both America and Europe, working with some of the dance world's illustrious choreographers such as
Mark Jaretsky, Janine During, and Mimi Girard.
She's been working with actors in the capacity of a movement director and choreographer for more than two decades. Prior to her role at East 15, she taught and directed plays at the prestigious New York Stella Adler Studio of Acting for 10 years. She has a huge number of movement and direction credits for plays all across the UK. To name but a few, Eclipsed and the Convert at The Gate in Notting Hill, Fuck the Polar Bears at the Bush Theatre, and Continuity at the Finborough Theatre. Fascinated by the body's potential for movement, she's also curious how it connects to our emotional and mental states, and is currently studying psychotherapy at the London School of Biodynamic Psychotherapy. The first time I saw Stephanie dance was at a performance by the artist Steve Claydon in the Hayward Gallery, London. I think it's fair to describe Stephanie as petite and slight. But as she danced, at one point in a move I would say was part shimmy, part something that one could imagine the way a prehistoric praying mantis would move, she made her way backwards down the rail of a cement stairwell. She was epic. Her energy and presence blew up the room. We became friends not long after and have spent many a night out dancing, me mostly watching Stephanie in awe. We've been on many long seaside walks, and I have benefited a heap of times from her talents in cooking Mexican food. Although I have to say I haven't had any made for me of recent, so hopefully this mega hint will soon remedy this. I'm so pleased to be able to do this interview, as it's taken some cajoling with us missing the opportunity in series one. So it's with great pleasure and great joy to welcome you, Stephanie, to Greater Than 11%.
Thanks, Renee.
I'm going to kick off straight away and ask you to tell me what it is Head of Movement involves.
East 15 Acting School has two campuses, and originally I was the assistant head of movement, and I taught on both campuses, though the campus in South End started to grow. So I transferred over and I only teach there now. As head of movement, I teach across four different courses. I organize their curriculum. I teach almost all of the cohorts. There's more than four courses at East 15. So I also hire and oversee the teaching on the other courses that I don't teach on that involve movement. I do movement support or movement direction on the productions that happen at Clifftown Theatre. So I meet with the directors, I find out what they need, I set tasks for the students, or I go into rehearsal and I clean things, or I help them make things. I used to actually make things, but, you know, with the busy schedule and the way that I'm training them, they're the ones making. I teach lots of classes. So most of my day is taken up in the classroom. That's what I do as head of movement.
So your role straddles physicality, so teaching movement, but also developing lessons, marking, admin, etc. So how do you manage the two elements of the job?
So basically what I do is I try to get people to move whose main intention isn't so much about movement like a dancer, but expressive of their humanity, and to be able to adapt and change the way they're moving to match the needs of what form they're working in. And so depending on the course, the forms themselves can be really different. So the BA undergraduate courses are 3 years long, and that training changes a lot during the 3 years. So I'd say in the first year, specifically, the question is, how do I move? How do you move? What does it mean to move? What's moving? Where's it going? What is coordination? What does it mean to be embodied? How do I look grounded? How do I feel grounded? Where does my breathing come from? What's happening if I'm in relationship with someone else, spatially or emotionally? And how does that create connection or movement or a change in an image or memory? And so the first year content is a lot of working with the impulse. I feel like I'm not making any sense at all, but I think I hear from my students a lot of times the first year doesn't really make sense. And it's a lot about being and doing and experimenting. It's like a laboratory of movement. Yeah, and then in the second year, we have to look more specifically about generating form, whether it's composition, so using the movement they're able to make to create either a dance or a narrative, or to incorporate it into a different form. And then in the third year, it's very specific about how do they use their physicality and their movement to be embodied in the world of the play or the piece that they're devising. Does that make sense?
It does, but what I'm really curious about is, so you have dance, as in dance, and then you have this physical movement element.
Yeah.
So for those of us like myself that are not that au fait with the world of dance and movement, what is the separation? So maybe give us a tangible example. If someone isn't training to be a dancer per se, where does this movement, where can it play out?
Well, to be a dancer means to train 8 hours a day. And yet actors have to be on stage and they need to look like they could move, they can move, that they could do anything, that they could transform in a moment from one thing to another, or that they could just be present in the character that they're playing. The biggest question for me when I transferred from being a dancer to training actors was, how do I get this understanding of coordination? Curiosity about space, like space in the body, space around the body, expressivity, like release of emotion. I mean, it's so many different things. It's like really, it's so hard to narrow it down. It's not a very linear process.
How was that for you, training as a dancer, dancing and performing all the time?
Yeah.
Choreography, moving into choreography and dancing. And then moving over and working with actors, not dancers.
So actually, I probably didn't choreograph too much on dancers. More as a maker, I started making and directing plays. And or I was doing movement direction for plays. And there would be a sequence in the play that would rely a lot more on musicality or physicality, or even something similar to dance. Could be dance-like. And yes, it could even be dance. And then I would work with the vocabulary the actors generated. So instead of me going, oh, do this, you know, and like showing them how my arm moved or my back moved, I would create these instigations. They would then create the movement. And then I would use the movement they generated to create the sequence that they would do. And a lot of times those sequences would have a point in relationship to what they were revealing about the narrative of the play, whether it was actually something really important in the story, like something happened between two people and that whole movement sequence would tell you what was going on between them. It could be the subtext, or it could be a chunk of material that wasn't in the written part of the play. You would see it through a movement sequence, or it could be more metaphorical or expressive. So not necessarily a linear movement in time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. So just thinking of that transition, why do you think you're more attracted or you moved towards that as opposed to choreographing pure dance?
For dance?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting because actually when I did my undergraduate degree, we had to do a final performance choreography. And I was really very interested in choreographers in New York from the 70s. Deborah Hay and Trisha Brown, her early works. And choreographers from the Judson Church era. And they were working with movement that was pedestrian. So it would be like a physical vocabulary anybody could do. Mm-hmm. I was really drawn to that. There was a lot of improvisation too. Mm-hmm. Contact improvisation came around that time period as well. And so there was this experimentation around using the body and not looking like you had a ton of dance training, even though a lot of those people did have this ability to move. They were testing limits in a way. When I had to do my final piece in university, I worked with a group of friends and I decided to base the piece on Dreams of a Friend. I didn't get a very good grade, but I think I just had this curiosity, like, what if I don't move as if I've been trained to move this way? Hmm. I think also as a dancer, as much as I loved it, I felt silenced by it. There was like always a right way to do something. Hmm. You know, put your arm here, put your leg there. And another part of me was so completely obsessed with like getting it right. And I would go to any length in my body to like master something. But there was like this rebel inside that wanted to do things the way I wanted to do it. Mm. And I loved improvising. I really loved improvising. And I had gotten a taste for it at a young age when I went to Arts Magnet High School in Dallas. I got thrown into the deep end. I didn't have a lot of dance training, but I was put in the advanced dance levels in the afternoon classes. And then after that, I went to CalArts for a year. It was much more of a master's program. I mean, they have a really strong undergraduate, but I definitely felt out of my depth there. I worked with amazing choreographers who were doing their master's degree, and I got to dance in these incredible pieces. But it was too much for me to be away from rain. Southern California is like sunny all the time. And you're stuck on this campus. And it was just, I don't know, it was just too much. I think I was too young. Mm. And then I went to Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia. Again, there was a lot of improvisation there. There was another Judy Still, who introduced me to Laban and Chris Burnside. And we did contact improvisation. And lots of different guest teachers would come in and we improvised a lot. It was a really creative environment. And I would say then, I think it's very different now. I think to get in, you have to have a lot of training. But there were people there that I was dancing with that had very different backgrounds. And even sometimes in class, there would be like sculptors or poets or writers in some of our creative classes. Wow.
That sounds great.
It was amazing. I loved it there. Yeah, that interchange between working with different people. And then from there, I went to New York City, and that was devastating. I was really broke. I used to look in the window at people eating, and I had like a million jobs. I like worked at Kinko's Copies. I worked as a nanny. I would work sometimes with Mimi Girard Dance Theater. Then I did lots of freelancing with Mark Jaretsky, Janine Durning. And then I worked with Ralph Jarzynski, who was a choreographer, now contact improv teacher in Germany.
So when you say freelancing, you were as a dancer freelancing?
Yeah, as a dancer, I was freelancing. Do you want to know what a day was like? It was just totally nuts. I might babysit half the day, and then I might go to a rehearsal for a few hours. Like I was a personal trainer. So I'd go to somebody's house and work with them. And then I would get on my scooter, because we all had Razor scooters, and I would scoot across town to another rehearsal. Yeah, and if I was lucky, the next day I would get up and go to class. In the morning, I would take a class. And yeah.
And scoot past people eating.
Scoot past people eating. That's right. Salivate. I used to model at an art school, so I spent a lot of time being still and naked.
You being still?
Yeah, I know. 20 minutes at a time, Renee.
Even still. So you were freelancing, juggling jobs, yeah. Living New York life.
Yeah. And then what happened?
Yeah.
I danced in a performance with a woman who, Joanne Edelman, and she taught at Stella Adler Studio of Acting. And she was going away. And I think actually I called her. I was like, how did, you know.
Please give me a job.
Give me a job. Well, you work with actors. What's that like? I was, you know, really interested in it. So I subbed for her. And that was my first introduction to Stella Adler. And then I picked up a few more teaching hours there. And I feel so lucky, really lucky. Tom Oppenheim, who's still the director there, kind of kept asking me back, encouraged me to watch other classes. So generous with information and ideas, and also really open and asked me questions. And all of a sudden, I found myself translating my dance language into this language for actors. I taught there 10 years. Still to this day, I feel like my home is there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it makes me quite emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a beautiful time.
Yeah, really good time. And lots of like growing and learning and this real permission to be fearless and try things. And like if you fail, it's not this big deal. It's like really what can you get out of it? What can you put into it? And I feel like I found my legs and I found my voice there. Mm. Absolutely, I found my voice. Yeah.
So you were at Stella Adler for 10 years.
Yes.
And then what happened next?
Yeah. Well, I won't go into my personal drama. But I ended up in London, which was a little bit of a surprise. I met an amazing woman, Caroline Byrne, who I became good friends with and later collaborated with her. She's a theater director. I worked as her movement director. Caroline said to me, oh, there's a job interview at East 15 Acting School. And so I went to the interview. And then I started teaching at East 15, which was a huge change, because I no longer was directing plays or making movement pieces where I was the maker. I became much more, I would say, I'm more of an educator now. It's much more about the training process. Mm-hmm. I mean, in New York, I was doing the training part too, but also I had a lot of creative outlet. Where here, my creative outlet is more in the classroom, and I'm so busy. I do still do movement direction on the plays, the productions that are going on. I would say I don't have the same amount of time, because the school's quite big. I don't have the same amount of time to actually spend on them. So I'm much more of an educator now. Mm. Occasionally, something will happen and the space will open up, and I'll be able to work on a production from beginning to end and be in collaboration with the director. But I would say in the last like 3 or 4 years, that exchange has been a bit rare. Though I have a really good collaborative relationship with the heads of the courses that I work with. I think this is part of why I don't have as much time, because the kind of people I'm training and what kind of training they're doing is much broader. Mm. So at Stella Adler, the emphasis was really on the acting, though there might be these like devised movement pieces, where at East 15, so like the physical theater course, they do like aerial circus stuff, and all their work tends to be highly physical. Mm-hmm. And so my first year of training is like I teach the contact improv with them for a whole year, and their skill level, I would say, would be, well, it's not the same as a dancer, but it has that same kind of athletic drive. Mm. East 15, especially South End, we create performers who are also makers. And so in some way, the question around what it is I'm teaching has really changed. So I find myself teaching composition, or it's not just how someone does something or what are their ideas. So they're really creative. Mm. Do I miss being creative? In some way, yes. In some way, no. Like I get really satisfied in the classroom. Mm.
You kind of covered it, but I'm curious as to why you were so drawn to dance. And I ask that because I know you personally and I've seen you dance socially, like when we go out.
Yeah.
And you're incredible. Like you can just switch into any kind of style, no problem. And you are always moving, stretching, touching bodies.
Yeah.
So why were you drawn to this kind of physical expression?
I have very early memories of it being a necessity, from like it being the 70s to like my parents like dancing in the living room and like learning to do a three-step turn and like clap my hands. And my parents used to square dance. I think they still square dance, actually. And like music being on and dancing in the car or dancing in the kitchen and like choreographing huge circuses in my backyard with my chickens and my dog and like, you know, yeah, inviting all the neighbors. I mean, they say most performers are wounded. So it's like, look at me. Don't look at me. Look at me. Don't look at me. I love to move. Mm. I just love to move. I don't know why.
I don't know. You painted a really beautiful picture. Like your household just feels like it's filled with music and dance.
It was. I mean, there was some conflict too. But
it was the 70s.
It was the 70s. We didn't wear seatbelts. Yeah, we didn't wear seatbelts. And we'd hang out in the back of a Volkswagen. No, we didn't have a Volkswagen, but it was a station wagon. And my feet would be up and I would be doing performances for the car behind us. And
look at me.
Look at me. I'd say both my parents really like to move too. Mm. They dance. They're from Southern Louisiana. So the Cajun two-step, you know, like, yeah, there was music and there was dancing inside all the conflict. Sorry, Mom.
Oh, that's hilarious. So in the intro, I talked about the first time I ever saw you was when you were performing for the artist Steve Claydon.
Yeah.
And what is it like working with someone outside that world? So like an artist.
Yeah.
Who isn't trained as a dancer, who Steve primarily works in sculpture and performance, but sculpture is, I'd say, his mainstay.
Yeah.
What is that like working with someone who doesn't have that language or that kind of, I don't know, background?
Yeah. I loved it. I loved his direction because it would be a series of images or videos and conversations about what he was interested in. In fact, the performance you saw, one of the aspects it was based on was a lemur, which they like run with their arms up over their head and they like have these really huge eyes, a specific group of lemurs, not just every lemur. Yeah, I had my arms over my head and I was jumping around and my eyes were really big. And because he would give me these, it was almost like he was directing. It was more like theater, even though I was generating movement. Mm. He would give me an image to work with and also a piece of text. And he gave me this incredible amount of freedom to then organize it in a way that made sense in relationship to the other performers and the space. He's an incredible artist because the layers of depth of history and meaning are all there. So what I enjoyed about it was this horizontal playing field of these different references coming in, and then I was moving them. Gosh, Renee, that was so long ago. but I can feel it in my body as if I did it yesterday. If this wasn't a microphone, I could probably get up and like hop down the stairs and like have the gun in my hand. And like if I could move it enough, I'm sure the text would come out of my body somewhere.
Yeah, it was amazing. So I guess it was a lot more freedom by the sounds of it.
It was freedom, but the references were really specific.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was this piece of text. And the whole feeling of the piece, for me, was about this post-war landscape.
So another element of that performance was that the audience were in the space with you, as opposed to you being on a stage or on a set.
Yeah.
What is that like? Because the audience is so physically close and can move.
Yeah.
Whilst you're performing. Yeah. And I wonder how, I guess you talked about doing improv, so I imagine you had a lot of experience in that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels comfortable.
Yeah.
Like I don't necessarily think of performance as having that fourth invisible wall and that it can't be broken. For me, it can happen any place, any time. It could happen on a street. It could happen on the tube. You know, I love things like that. That you don't need a theater to have a performance. Mm. And what is that relationship to be next to you when something unusual is happening? That architecture of the Hayward Gallery is incredible. Those concrete staircase. Mm. I mean, I couldn't go in there and just walk down the stairs. I was like, you know, as soon as we went in there, I couldn't. I was like, Steve, can I slide down the banister? And he's like, yes, of course. Yeah, architecture is so interesting. And to be in relationship to space, like whether it's a beam of light coming into the room or this, you know, concrete staircase or a warm body of another human being.
I'm so in awe of dancers because they're so in tune with their bodies. I mean, you and I have done Pilates and I've joked around like, what the hell is this guy talking about? I don't know where that part of my body even is when he's referencing it. So in terms of knowing your body so well and performing and pushing and challenge your body, how is that intertwined with what you do now as an educator?
To bring that awareness into someone else's body. There's this great book called Job's Body, and Don Juan talks about, like, if you have an awareness of your little toe, like you can do it now, like just think of your little toe. And in that thinking of the little toe, you're firing neural networks. And the more you fire a neural network, the more that network gets used. So it's like a pathway. You know when you're like in a park and there's a sidewalk, but you can see that there's this path that people take that's not the sidewalk. You know, they've worn out the grass. So that's kind of how I think of awareness in the body. Like, you're probably still thinking about your little toe, aren't you?
Thinking about my little toenail. Does it need a trim?
Does your toenail need a trim, right? And so then your consciousness is there. So you're actually, it's lighting up. Your little toe is actually, there's stuff going on and there's a pathway being built. Mm. And so like when you're in a Pilates class or you're in a movement class and somebody says, you know, feel your sacrum. Can you feel the connection between your heel and your sitting bone? You know, the first time it's like, what's a sitting bone? You know, oh, it's the bones underneath your ass cheeks that you're sitting on. And so then you bring this consciousness to it. And the more consciousness you bring to it, the more awareness you have. It's like Christmas tree lights or something. So you're just lighting things up. And I always feel like the more awareness you have around something, the more choice you have.
Mm. Yeah, I've never really thought about that. And so with all this amazing knowledge that you've built up over time, how has that funneled into you, what you do now with all your students?
I mean, I feel so privileged to have that time with them. I mean, honestly, sometimes I walk into the room and I feel so stressed, like, oh God, you know, we've got all this stuff to do. And then I just see them and that need to accomplish something kind of drops away. And it's like presence. I'm in the room with these people and they have presence and I have a presence. And this kind of witnessing starts to take place. And it's a little bit like stepping into the unknown. Mm-hmm. Like, even if I know what I'm going to do before I walk into the room, for some reason, I think I've been doing it for so long, it just drops away. And it becomes just about that moment that we have together. I mean, luckily, I've been teaching for like 22 years now. And then dancing professionally 10 years before that. I'm not some like novice who's just walking in the room and throwing my hands up in the air going, this is an improvisation. Although I know it probably feels like that. And I think sometimes those are the best days we have together. Mm. When I just actually had a group the other day and I went in and I could just tell. Like if I got technical, if I started naming things, they were just going to fall apart. They had had enough information. I just kind of like threw the towel in and went with what they had. And we got so much done. Yes. I mean, their moving was incredible. And they were, I would say the level of performance was even heightened because it wasn't about the technique. Mm. And yet you need technique, but we had done enough. I didn't need to like name things and go over that again. They needed the space to like be present to it, to move it, to let them move what they remembered of it, or to even just to let them move and have no clue about what was happening. Mm. And sometimes they go, oh, I'm thinking too much. And I think, well, move your thinking like your thinking is movement. Like this is all movement. I feel like what I'm training is for people to be really conscious and be with themselves and be able to move what's happening in the moment. And then to look at how can I do that in relationship? If I have to be someone else, how does someone else move their moment-to-moment existence? It's like fireworks.
So you have to, I mean, you talked about like looking at body language and reading that, but I guess like having classes and multiple classes, like you rely, I guess, a lot, like you said, on intuition. You walked in, you got a sense of that space and knowing when to push and when to step back and change direction.
Yeah. And I used to think this intuition was some kind of mystical thing that I had. But what I've realized is that I am reading lots of signs. Mm. I'm noticing what's happening in the space when people are connecting, when they're disconnecting. And sometimes them disconnecting is as important part of the process as them being present and how they come back in, or how do I invite them back in? And how when we're working on something, how can we take it to the next level? And so I used to think it was just intuition, but I do feel like I'm reading the color of their skin, their breath, their energy levels. Mm. I mean, it's a bit difficult if everybody's like lying on the floor and doesn't want to do anything to like actually get them to stand up. Mm. But I'm able to do that without being like, stand up. Why are, or sometimes I do that too. Why are you on the floor? Get up.
Reliving the conflict of childhood.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, it's so true. Oh my God. It's absolutely true. Sometimes I just go in and I all of a sudden become all of their mothers, you know. So, I love it though, but that's it. That's what acting's about. It's like, what is this relationship and how does it change you? You know, I'm stimulating you. What happens to you if I shout at you like I'm your mother? You know, and how does that make you move?
Quickly.
Love you, Mom.
So is there a typical day for you in your role?
No. No, but that made me have this memory when I was dancing in New York. I was out to eat dinner with a bunch of dancers. They were so lovely. They had these rituals of like what they did in the morning and like how they would take care of themselves. And they were like going around the table sharing what their process was. And they got to me and they said, what do you do up first thing in the morning? And I said, I wake up and go, what day of the week is it? Where am I supposed to be and what am I supposed to do? So I think I kind of live like kind of a little bit in the state of chaos. Luckily, I have a timetable, though if it changes, everything falls apart. I have a timetable. And so before the term starts, I know what each day entails. And so I wake up in the morning. I know, were you asking me what I do first thing in the morning? I wake up in the morning, I go, ah! But then I start to think through, oh, who do I have? Where are they? What's the last thing we did? I do this daydreaming about what it is I'm supposed to do.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Almost like picturing the day before it happens. Is that right?
Yeah, I picture the day. And usually a lot of it's like remembering the last time I saw them and what happened in that circumstance. Mm. I try to remember what's the last thing we did and where we got to. Like, there needs to be a certain amount of openness so I can really be where the students are. But it's a full day. It's like, you know, I have 8 hours of teaching. There's like 20-minute breaks between the first morning class and the afternoon class is an hour for lunch. Sometimes at lunch we have meetings. Sometimes during my break, a student will come to me and say they're injured or there's something they're struggling with personally that they feel like is interfering with the work. So sometimes when I would be having downtime, it's not really downtime. Mm-hmm. 3 terms, and luckily we have this summer break, and in the summertime I really try to like turn off. I swim, I go for walks with you, I go out dancing, I do Pilates, I do contact improv in the summer. I really try to find ways where I'm doing the things that really affect and influence my teaching, but they're not about teaching at all. Yeah, because it's so full. It's really full to hold a presence for that many people too, to, you know, to hold a space for them so they can learn and grow. And I feel like they do. It's such a privilege to watch them change. I get quite emotional when they're in their third year and I see how much they've developed. It's really satisfying.
What skills do you need to be head of movement within education?
So to be a movement for actors teacher, you need to have some understanding of acting, but also training and physical skills. And then to be a movement director, to be able to understand the context of a play, the emotional journey and arc of each character, and also the world that the director wants to create. And then the bigger arc of being head of movement, it's to understand the trajectory across the 3 years of training and to be able to create a curriculum that's course specific. Mm-hmm. And then the 4 courses that I teach on in Southend, their training's very different from each other. The kind of text they're working on, the other physical skills they have changes for each course. So like on acting and stage combat, when I first started teaching on the course, a lot of students would have lots of injuries and they would come into my class and my class would hurt them. And like when you see people who are actually hurting, it's the last thing you want to do is, you know, I don't have that masochistic sense in myself that I did as a dancer, like, well, you must endure this no matter what. I want to see how can I uncoil this and how can I give you a skill that will support you when you're using this intense amount of muscularity? How can I, you know, give you space to uncoil it? Yeah, so it's very course specific.
So what advice would you give someone considering a career either in movement direction or movement education?
I'd say the generations of movement directors and movement for actor teachers that are coming up now are a lot more prepared in some way than I was, because they actually, when they're training as an actor, they have a consciousness that it's there, where I don't know, I feel like I had to really make it up as I went along. I didn't know, and luckily I had people like the people at Stella Adler, all the other teachers and trainers who were open to that collaboration, that it became a conversation that let me find my way without knowing where I was going. So I guess my advice would be, I mean, I know you can like do an MA in this now, which I find really amazing that there's a training that you could go and seek out if you wanted to do what I do. but pathways aren't always what you expect them to be. And my experience of, like, even my career changes from moving from dancer to being a movement director for theater productions to then teaching, I guess I had no idea that that's what was happening. But I knew myself well enough to follow the things that I was interested in. So I'd say if I'd give anybody advice, stay curious about what you're interested in and move towards those things.
Yeah, that's great advice. Can I ask you what has been one of the biggest challenges in your career?
Disappointment.
In what sense?
You know, when you really love something and you think it's great because you love it and you want other people to recognize it and they don't. Yeah. So disappointment in that it's not recognized. And yet inside you was like really an important moment. There was a lot of growth or change or I would feel like my skill level was like right, you know, peak at the top. It didn't get received in the same with the same capacity it felt. I think this is really common for performers. You know, you're always walking this line between people recognizing what you do and going, you know, giving you the 5-star review and or not giving it to you, even if you feel like, oh, this is like the best thing I've done. I'm having this memory now of being in New York and just feeling like my performance level was kind of at the top and it didn't get received necessarily by the media, maybe by the smaller dance world, you know, by people around me it did, but you know, that was really difficult. Like, how do you recuperate from that and feel like you're still worthy and that you're still on your feet? Yeah, sometimes you don't always get the recognition kind of when you need it.
Yeah, I guess it's like most creative paths and most creative people definitely feel that. It's the shortcomings or when you've put everything into a piece of work and even though you might hate it, you know that it's taken blood, sweat, pain, time, energy.
Yeah.
And it isn't received.
Yeah.
You aren't given that prop of love that you need for all that hard work and pain you've been through.
Yeah.
It's tough.
It's so tough, yeah. Yeah. And what happens after? How do you pick yourself up? How do you carry on?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, when I've had exhibitions or pieces of work, the self-loathing.
Yeah.
The aftermath is horrendous and it's always a come down because you've got the adrenaline working up to the event and then it happens.
Yeah.
And then you have a free fall moment where I don't have the pressure anymore, it's done, it's up, and then going into that very hard emotional landscape.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with that?
And even if it goes well, there's like this, like, it's...
Oh yeah, the come down.
Afterwards, it's like someone has died, you know? There's a sense of loss. I mean, you've put all this energy and love into this thing and then it's over. It's complete. How do I deal with it? Lots of tears. Lots of going out dancing to loud music. Friends, good food, a good walk by the seaside. Something else that makes me excited about thinking and working again. You know, in New York, you like sometimes will look up and there'll be this concrete windowsill or something and there'll be this like plant growing out of absolute nothing. It's like, where did that energy come from? It's just like come out of absolutely nowhere. That's what it feels like. It just feels like this thing that like just keeps coming back. Yeah, I feel quite resilient in that way, that I can be kind of pushed against quite hard and this energy or desire to make or to be with other people who are making or be creative or work on the form of, you know, acting or moving. It just kind of just keeps coming back up. It's like a weed, Renee. It's like this sunflower weed that'll just grow anywhere.
I've just got a flashback to you in your station wagon with your dancing feet for the cars behind. Yeah. It's in you.
It's in me. It's absolutely in me. Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you love about your job?
The people I work with. Absolutely the people I work with. I love my students. I just love them, even though they drive me nuts. Sometimes I tell them the same thing over and over and over again, you know, and it's just like, it's so, I recognize that I say, you know, you need to work on this, and it's so hard to actually change. Mm. I see them working so hard, and still sometimes they're working hard.
Yeah.
But I enjoy my time with them so much. Mm-hmm. And also that I don't have to think in a way where 1 + 1 = 2. Yeah, I love that.
So can you tell me, I've got a good idea of this anyway, but can you tell our lovely audience what you do to fuel your own creativity?
Mm.
Where do you go to see?
Yeah.
Be.
I love to go to museums. I love to go for walks. As Renee knows, we live in this amazing landscape that's very unusual. It's nothing like where I grew up in Texas. It's these mud flats and they're tidal. And I love to go out when the tide's out and like walk on these mud flats, a sandbar. I love swing dancing.
You're so good at it.
Well, I'm a renegade. I'm a wild one on the dance floor. But luckily, the community that I go dancing with, they don't mind.
Mm.
And people dress up in great vintage clothes. And they get really sweaty when they're dancing. And I love it. Yeah, and the music's incredible. Mm.
So we're coming to the end of the interview.
Yes.
It's been so lovely talking about your career trajectory. Because I knew bits, but actually you filled in loads of gaps that I didn't know. And yeah, there's so many curious aspects that are on our walks. I shall be probably prodding some more.
I can't wait.
But before you go, I'm wondering if you can tell us what you've got coming up in the next few weeks or months.
So there will be several shows opening in Clifftown Theatre in Southend-on-Sea. For East 15 Acting School,
great.
Which is part of the University of Essex. Got to put everybody's name in there. So there's several shows I'm working on. Some of it is individual student work. Some is guest directors. So something has emerged from teaching. And one of the things that's emerged from teaching is noticing that when working with being embodied and movement, a lot of personal stuff comes up for the performer, for the student. And I became curious about knowing what is that? What's happening? What's happening for them? And through that curiosity, I started doing a training in body psychotherapy, specifically biodynamic psychotherapy, which works with massage and the stuff. It's going to sound like vegetable therapy, but it's vegeto, meaning the vegetative system. So like the involuntary movements that happen in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit like talking to the unconscious and bringing that up through movement. And so I've been doing that training. I try not to mix and match it into my teaching, but it comes very much out of what I was noticing was coming up in the classroom, but didn't necessarily have a place and relationship to performance. But through the process of doing the training, I've learned so much about what's happening in the process of being human,
mm-hmm.
like how we're physiologically or phenomenologically responding to circumstances, the kind of consciousness and unconsciousness that is going on in our relationships and in our personal processes. I try not to weigh my classes down with it, but it's definitely been a huge informative experience for myself as a human being. Yeah, I'm not sure yet how that'll change my pathway.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it feels like a really supportive supportive thing underneath my training of actors. But I wonder at some point if I'll want to work more one-to-one with people in a therapeutic process. Mm. I'm not quite sure where it's going to go next, but that's a big part of what's happening coming up, and that's what's happening in my life now.
And you've been undertaking that study for a number of years as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm in my third year. Mm. Oh, gosh, I'm in my fourth year of 4 years of training. Wow. Yeah.
Amazing. So something I ask everyone before they leave is there a job in the creative industries you know little about? And if so, I could potentially get someone in that role on the podcast. And also, is there a woman that you would recommend for me to get in contact to have on Greater Than 11%?
There's two things I don't really know much about. One is like dance therapy or art therapy, mm-hmm. where the creative pathway is the process that they're using towards therapy. I don't really know that much about it.
Yeah.
And also, I know there's this place where art and science meet, where people are both artists and scientists, and I don't even know what that role's called, but I know people who are involved in science have to have really creative process.
They're definitely, I mean, I don't know what they are either, but it reminds me of the artists that work with the photographs from NASA. And then they colour them all, because the cameras that are in outer space only do black and white. And so the images come in and then they colour them. I think a lot of it is projection of what they think those starbursts or star clouds or meteor clouds look like. But yeah, that is a job. That's incredible.
Yeah, really incredible.
So yeah, I mean, art and science definitely intersects time and time again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I need to find like an old master / new master. Because science and art was so entwined, wasn't it? Like,
yeah.
Thinking about Da Vinci and that whole cohort.
It was like they were feeding each other and working together.
And alchemy and all those elements.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm on a mission now.
Okay.
So you just find the job.
Yeah.
And so a woman?
There's two women. Unfortunately, I don't remember one of them's last name. So Bryony, I do not remember her last name. She's got this clothing line called Pallava, and she's a visual artist, and she draws the prints that go on her fabric and then makes the dresses. So I'm really interested in, like, how does she do all that?
Amazing.
And every season she's coming up with these different images, so the prints are always changing. And then the other person is the director, Caroline Byrne, who I've collaborated with several times. She has this ability to lay what she wants on the line. In every process, she gets a strong sense of what she wants, her vision, and she's fearless. She just finds this power to, like, stay on the path. And she just pulls these incredible creative collectives together.
Well, she sounds awesome.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Well, both of them sound awesome.
They're both awesome, yeah.
So I'll definitely reach out and see if they'll come on.
Okay, great. Cool.
I've so loved chatting to you. I'm lucky because I get to do it often. But thank you. This has been fun.
Thank you, Renee. Thanks.
Listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review and rate, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. Also, stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases.